Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Hi, welcome to Sixth Edition of Blues Hook. Again, John, Dave, and myself. We're going to look back over Leinster's victory against the Scarlets and look forward to Ireland's game against Wales at the weekend and all the other Six Nations action. So, lads, fairly comprehensive victory against the Scarlets, 52-25 over there, 7 tries, and the boys, the young lads, really kind of shone.
Yeah, I was a bit apprehensive about the possibility of what kind of a back line we could put out at the time. And I think we did keep it in the forwards a lot. In fairness, we scored a lot of tries off Miles, and we did a lot. But the guys we had did pretty well, considering how deep we had to go in. Like, we had a sub-academy guy come on and, you know, make a pretty good showing for his debut.
He's actually the son of a friend of mine, and it sort of dates me very old when a lad I know, Joe, his son is playing for Leinster. I kind of had to cut out all my grey hairs because of that.
That's wait till it's your grandchildren, mate.
I know, yeah, true enough.
But yeah, I thought he looked really good. I saw him in the Ulster A game as well. He looks like he's, you know, ready to go. Just point him and you know, give him a little bit of coaching and he'd be fine. Max O'Reilly scored a wonderful try with a beautiful step. Had a few shaky bits as well, in fairness to him, but, you know, it's his second game.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Max O'Reilly because his first game didn't go well.
That's true.
And he came back and he put in a pretty good performance, I thought, for a young guy. Like, as you say, what is he, first year academy? For him to come. He showed great.
Sorry, I was just going to say, in that game, he was in a back three with another debutant first year academy guy, Andrew Smith. You know, so this time he had Dave Kearney.
Yeah, I thought he showed great kind of a strength of character, you know, and he took his try suit really, really well. So, it was good. I mean, Hawkshaw was brilliant. I thought he took his try magnificently well. Ably assisted, it must be said, by JB Osborne. I mean, that was the classic case of forwards win matches and backs decide by how much our pack pummeled them. Absolutely pummeled them.
Yeah. Well, it was obviously in the plan. A blind man could have told you that we're going to play in Wales against, you know, with a back line that is a little bit on the young side and inexperienced side. And the pack we had was pretty tasty considering how many were away with Ireland. So it didn't take the back row alone was fairly impressive. You know, Jack Conan and Josh Murphy and Dan Levy, like, that's, you'd send that out in Europe, you know, and not feel bad about it. So to send it to a Pro 14 kind of refix game was pretty impressive. So we're always gonna keep it tight in the pack. And I think that had the effect of what we did was we did that cliche earning the right to go wide. Like, we bait the shit out of them until there was a good opening. And it was O'Reilly's try actually was a good example where a gap opened up and he went straight through it and he was gone for a dust. But we didn't just throw stuff around. That's what happened, I think, in the Connacht match a bit. We were firing it around for the crack because we're at home and we're playing Connacht and we've never lost them in living memory. And it didn't go so well this time. But like I said, we had the experience of, we had two experienced guys in the back three all the same, despite the amount of, it's the centres where we're really stuck with injury. I was impressed
and exasperated by Turner going off injured. just after half time, you know. And obviously, I mean, I'm sure Osborne was delighted to get his chance, but I wouldn't say he was expecting to play 35 minutes.
No, no. And he really showed up well. And 13, as we all know, is a tough enough, especially in defence, tough enough position to play.
It does show how many injuries we do have. The Liam Turner is considered one of the experienced players.
Yeah, another academy guy. But having said all that, the Scarlets were not up to a huge amount, considering they'd fellas like Johnny McNichol kicking about, and you know, a guy who's not in good form but is a fabulous rugby player. One of those Kiwis that just they churn out all the time, you know, who's just not quite good enough to be an All Black, but good enough to be in any other bloody international team. So
they did kind of have a good start. I mean, they were 10-7 up after 20.
Yeah.
You know, and like I was kind of thinking, God, this is a game we needed obviously to win. Hopefully with a bonus point just to keep us that little bit ahead of Ulster. And I was thinking after 20 minutes, oh, I'm not so sure about this. After my hopes being dashed of Benetton beating Munster, which we'll get to. I thought this could be a disaster of a Saturday. But like fair play, Leinster just put it into third gear or fourth gear and motored on after those 20 minutes.
Yeah, Leinster don't start well, or haven't anyway in recent games. And as you say, I mean, it was 10-7 after 20 minutes. And then by 40 minutes, the bonus point was in the bag. Yeah. You know, it just shows you what they can do when they lift the pace. Yeah, I mean, Scarlets are one of those teams. Scarlets are one of the few teams who, you know, have the wherewithal within their backline to unpick Leinster. Because Scarlets, no less than ourselves, always churn out huge numbers of really, really talented backs who are good at the basics. That's what Scarlets are. It's the mark of the team. But, I mean, it doesn't matter how good your backs are if you don't have the ball, and our pack didn't give them the ball. And as a result of which, it took a lot of the pressure off our fairly callow back line because they didn't have to do it. It was the trenches were been ploughed by the forwards, and it gave them time and space and, you know, a bit of breathing space as well.
Yeah. We conceded 3 tries. So, you know, it just goes to show that if the Scarlets had been a little bit more tighter in the pack, they could have caused us a bit of damage because, as you've mentioned, there was a lot of inexperienced lads in our back line who probably weren't up to speed with the systems and the defensive systems that they needed to have in place, and maybe even the physicality of playing at that level.
That's a great point, Jason. I mean, there is a huge step up in physicality between playing against, you know, guys who are in their late teens or playing AIL and playing against professional rugby playing men. There is a big step up from academy and under 20s to the pro 14, from the pro 14. There's a big step between each of those steps from pro 14 to Europe, from Europe to international rugby. There is a step. So, I mean, if you have something like strong pack that can help ease you in, it makes a big difference.
Thankfully we saw Tadhg Furlong run onto the pitch for the first time in nearly a year, certainly over a year for Leinster and just under a year since he played for Ireland in that game against England, I think. You know, it was a long time out and he managed to put in a good shift. Like, he looked quite strong in his front. And he made a couple of bullock and breaks running into people. Yeah, but it was good to see him get 40 minutes. And I'm sure, I was surprised to see him running out. Like, he literally played a minute and 30 seconds of the second half. And I'd say Andy Farrell was trying to frantically dial Leo Cullen's number off the pitch. But it was great to see him back. And I think a couple of other notable, Dan Levy just continues improving. I think he made something like 17 tackles and got another try. And Harry Byrne, I think, you know, we were disappointed that he didn't manage to get onto the pitch. I think it was against Northampton in the Heineken Cup match when he cried off. So I thought it was great to see him, you know, get a run. Like, he's going to get a run in the games now. And to see sort of sort of to see really if he's worth all the hype. And certainly 15 points, I think, in the game. You know, he's not the finished article. Like, he's still only young, but I think he definitely has a future, doesn't he?
He's got all the toys. He's got all the skills. He's the out half in waiting. If I know Sexton's ever getting another 2 years, which I'm sure we're going to discuss. And I know Joey Carberry is made of a chocolate and glass combination. That seems to see him on the injury table a lot. But, you know, barring those two, I don't see who else is ahead of Harry Byrne for Ireland. You know, certainly within a season. Yeah. By this time next season, I don't see it. But next Six Nations, I don't see who else is going to be ahead of Harry Byrne.
Are we not bringing him on the Lions tour at this stage? Some of the hype's been a bit overwrought. I certainly think he's next cab on the rank. I think at the end of, as you say, at the end of, he may have, for Leinster, he may have surpassed his brother. He may supplant his brother rather in the Leinster selection. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. But let's not get carried away yet. He hasn't played any European rugby.
Yeah, fair enough. He just does look to have the skills.
He has. I'm not saying write him off. No, I definitely think that, you know, he will be challenging for the starting 10 jersey in the not too distant future. But at the same time, let's not boil the piss out of him yet.
No,
he's plenty more time to develop. Yeah. And so there's one other player I wanted to draw our attention to was Ross Maloney. Like, you know, there's some very notable other second rows in Leinster. Obviously, Toner has been there, done that with Ireland and Leinster. Ryan is now the new superhero in the Irish team. Scott Fardy, when he plays in the second row, has been in a World Cup final. But like, Ross Maloney's kind of the understated guy, but always performs in these matches. Maybe he's not quite, you know, Heineken Cup standard, or, you know, it's not going to be sort of matching a Toji or sort of that sort of level. But when you need a guy to put in a big shift and win ball, like, he's done it, you know. When that could have been a real banana skin of a fixture over in Clonetley. And, like, he really stood up in the game, I thought, on Saturday night.
Do you know who and Leinster fans will slaughter me for saying this, but there was two players who played for Munster and they were absolutely admirable players for Munster. And that was Mick O'Driscoll and Billy Holland. Ross Maloney reminds me a lot of them. Maybe not quite top-end international players like some of the guys he plays beside, but he's the kind of guy that if Leinster win the Pro 14, when Leinster win Pro 14, it's because of guys like Ross Maloney and Josh Murphy and all that. It's not really because of guys like James Ryan and stuff like that. That wins you finals. But getting you to the finals is the guys like Ross Maloney, Josh Murphy, Harry Byrne, Ross Byrne. Those are the guys who get you into that final in the first place. So I have a huge amount of respect for... I mean, he's just a really good pro.
Yeah. Very solid guy. And like you say, it's the attitude. I think what's holding him back maybe at the very top end is it's just pure height. I mean, he's a fraction under 6'6", I think. Whereas the like of James Ryan is 6'8". And, you know, there's other guys that are just... It seems to be just a little... If you're under 6, you have to be something special like Alan Wynne-Jones if you're under 6'6", to make international rugby. So I'd say that's certainly a contributory factor. But, you know, the guy is such a worker and he's put in so much. Like, it's a huge credit to the guy that seeing all these people who are allegedly ahead of him doesn't put him off at all. It doesn't make him go, you know what, I won't try so hard this week. Not a bit of it. Those are the kind of guys that can actually beat their way to the top by sheer willpower, you know. I wouldn't have any worries about him. Okay, you wouldn't maybe put him out in a Heineken Cup final, but I wouldn't have any worries of him playing in a Heineken Cup pool game against pretty much anyone.
He's And it has to be remembered, just because he's been around for so long, it seems like he's ancient, but he's not.
He's only 26, 27, yeah, isn't he?
And he's in a position where, which worldwide, not just like in Ireland, but worldwide, does seem to, the players who play there seem to have a certain amount of longevity, provided they don't get, you know, anything serious. So he could have 10 years as a productive member of Leinster or whoever, and be a really good pro and you know, do well for himself. And he deserves to, because he works his arse off.
Yeah.
Agreed. So we go now for a 3-week break from game to game when we take on, I think it's the Dragons in our next match. But just looking at the table, we're 10 wins from our 11 games played, obviously 10 bonus points and scored amassed 50 points. And we're 4 ahead of Ulster. But just looking at some of the stats and the other stats, we scored 396 points, which is an average of 36 in each of the games. We scored 56 tries, which is an average of 5 tries per game. Like, phenomenal numbers, really.
Yeah. But, you know, everybody's always going to say, oh, but, you know, sure, it's not a proper league. Sure, nobody's, you know, the Welsh are in shit at the moment, and everybody in Scotland and Italy are not good. And we've no South African teams so far this season. My money's saying we're not going to. This Rainbow Cup is a bit of a rainbow unicorn. But anyway, it's still an impressive feat, like, because... Okay, Ulster are doing pretty well as well. They've only lost to us. We've only lost to Connacht. Munster have only lost to us, as far as I know. Munster have only lost to one game, haven't they?
Yeah.
So, you know...
Two games, beaten by Ulster.
Oh, Ulster as well, yeah. Sorry, excuse me. So, you know, it looks like they have the easier conference. Although maybe when the Scarlets were being swapped around and all this kind of stuff, it didn't look... Like, it might be quite so easy, but it seems to be the easier of the two just on what's happening this season. But, yeah, it's a good position to be in. We've Ulster on the 6th of March. I think it's the second or third last game, I think it is, of the league. So that looks like the decider, unless one of us slips up beforehand. You know, it's going to be a good one to look forward to. In the middle, I think it's the second break weekend in the Six Nations. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when we get that far.
Yeah. One bit of transfer news. We saw that Nick McCarthy's leaving his beloved Munster and going back up the M7 up to Dublin. So he's didn't really work out from down there. I mean, I thought he was unfortunate with the way the whole Albie Matheson kind of thing played out.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, you know, the sort of the emergence of Casey. And obviously, they have the incumbent Irish scrum half there as well. So,
the good news for Leinster is he's going to get plenty of workout between that. There's Conor Murray and Craig and Casey are away with Ireland. So, they've actually had to borrow Paddy Patterson off us for the rest of the season, as far as I know. Yeah. So, he's going to be starting pretty much every game during the Six Nations, so that'll be interesting to see. Or it'd be good from a Leinster perspective for him to get that run of, because he hasn't had a run at all since he went there.
I think he's a good player. I think he was probably right to move at the time he moved. He couldn't foresee that, you know. I mean, he wasn't. He couldn't foresee the seemingly never-ending contract of Albie Matheson. He couldn't foresee the promotion of or the rapid ascent of Craig Casey. He made what was the right decision in retrospect, which is always hindsight's always 20/20. But in retrospect, it didn't work out for him, so he's coming back to Leinster. I'm glad to have him back. I thought he was a good player before he left. He's still a good player.
Absolutely.
He's in a bit of a rock and a hard place because, you know, if you think about this, there's currently 5 international. Probably 6 or 7 internationals scrum halves currently playing in Ireland at the moment. You've got, you know, Cooney, obviously, for whatever reason, has been out of the loop in up in Ulster. You've got McGrath and Gibson Park in Leinster. obviously you've got
Marmion
and Caelan Blade over in Connacht, you know, and then you got the two lads, Casey and Murray down in Limerick. So he's kind of got a, no matter where he goes, he's got stiff competition trying to even get into the, you know, let's say the non, you know, Heineken Cup final team.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
it's an unfortunate time to be a scrum half in Ireland. I mean, I don't think we've ever had so many. Okay, I'm not saying any of them, with the exception of Murray, are world class, but I don't think we've ever had so many decent scrum halves. I mean, we've always had problems producing scrum halves. I reckon Ireland produce one world class or one international class, top international class scrum half every 20 to 30 years. So we've always had problems producing them. But at the moment, I don't think we've ever had so many, you know, pretty decent ones. I mean, by pretty decent, I mean the standard of a Marmion, McGrath, Cooney, you know, Casey potentially, and then with Caelan Blade potentially, and then with Conor Murray being the alpha dog, as it were. It's an unfortunate time to be a scrum half in Ireland.
Well, speaking of scrum halves, we never mentioned Luke McGrath. I thought that game was suited down to a T.
I thought he was man of the match in that game.
He was really good. And he, you know, a game that's going to be forward dominated away from home is just meat and drink to him, because he's such a good lad around the fringes of a scrum. He's such a good lad for marshalling the pack when they're mauling. He's such a good lad for sniping off a set piece or off a maul or off at the back of a ruck. He's ideally suited to that game, and it showed. And his passing was pretty good too, which is very easy to get.
I thought he played that game like a piano.
And the other one I mentioned would be...
He was given a bit of an armchair ride though, wasn't he?
Oh, he was, absolutely, yeah. Oh, no, there's no argument. But to a certain extent, for a player like Luke McGrath, the style of scrum half he is, I mean, to a certain extent, he builds the armchair.
Yeah. And the other one I would mention, I thought his twin brother had togged out for Leinster as well, because Jack Conan was everywhere, making tackles, making yards, he was another guy who was a contender. He actually got man of the match, didn't he?
He did get man of the match.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Another guy who always kind of sneaks under the radar and is almost universally good every time he plays is Josh Murphy.
Yeah, he's very impressive.
If you don't notice the six, he's had a good game, so.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't notice the six except for the boot marks on his face. He's had a good game.
So there was one other match at the weekend. I kind of alluded to it. Munster narrowly beat Treviso with a late JJ Hannah and drop goal. Kind of like, obviously, I think I did want Treviso to win that game, but if someone was going to win it in the last second, I'm glad it was JJ, because he's copped an awful lot of, you know, crap, because he's not Ronan O'Gara. And like, it's kind of, you know, most of us are just human and can't do the things that, you know, O'Gara or Driscoll or whoever could do. And like, you know, everyone has flaws, but I'm glad that he kind of managed to have the last laugh in that drop goal at the end, because, you know, it's just terrible to see someone's self-confidence destroyed.
Isn't it a classic element of sport, though, that kind of redemption thing from zero to hero in the space of one drop goal? I mean, he went from double Jesus to double divil, and now he's back to at least one Jesus again. But you have to say he knew he was taking that drop goal. I mean, you could see him positioning himself, and he had the confidence to. Do you remember when we played Toulon? You could not find someone capable of taking a drop goal with GPS that time. Madigan didn't want to know. Coppert didn't want to know. None of them were interested. He was taking that drop goal. He dropped back into the pocket. He called it and he knocked it over. And you've got to admire his chutzpah.
Yeah, I agree. It was good to see him do it. Normally, as you know, I would support any Irish province, even Munster, over foreign opposition, especially Cardiff. but in this case, I just had, you know, sometimes you sit down to watch a game and you think you're supporting one team, and by the, you know, after your first few minutes,
you switch to this.
Well, you know, intellectually I was supporting Munster, but I discovered that I wasn't after about 20 minutes. And just because A, Treviso have been having a bad run, B, they're the underdog, and C,
They really did. They came from a position you didn't expect them to come back from. They came back from it, and then obviously it took a kind of a season defining moment to beat them. You know, you got to give them credit for that. I mean, they do have what is it, 5 losing bonus points, or 5 or 6. It was 5. So I mean, they might have lost all their games, but they've been there or thereabouts. And they are a team that loses a lot of players.
Yeah. As many as us.
Yeah.
But like, I just, even from the kickoff, the ball bounced and it reminded me of that Wasps Toulouse Heineken Cup final. You know, the ball kind of bouncing over the line and Rob Howley scoring. But, you know, Munt, I think, was Sweetenham got in. Was it that scored that try?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, they were 12-0 down after 10 minutes. And I thought, Jesus, they're brutal. And then they came back. And then, you know, but like the thing was that Munster, they got into that 12-0 lead. They only got one penalty after 54 minutes and didn't score from the 9th minute until the 81st minute, with the exception of a 3-pointer. You know, and that's the second game. They did it against Leinster as well. Like, you can't go, you know, whatever.
You do that a
75%
lot.
Of the game without scoring.
They do that a lot. They go through huge periods of time in games without scoring. They seem to be kind of like they score in streaks. Against Claremont, it was the same. I mean, they went a long time without troubling the scorers and then just went buck ape mental. You've got to build yourself into games or build yourself your way through games. Munster don't do that. Now, whether that's because, you know, there's new coaching staff there or whatever, and they haven't got the message across and guys are still learning, I don't know. But for whatever reason, they don't manage games well.
Yeah, like it's going to catch up with them. You know, I think Gordon Darcy said in the post-match, it's papering over, you know, while I suppose there'll be plays written about the drop goal. You know, Darcy was kind of saying it's just papering over the cracks. And unfortunately, they're going to come up against a couple of good sides and it'll be curtains.
By the way, I have to say, I enjoy Gordon Darcy and Peter Stringer's punditry as a double act. I think they're very good.
Yeah. I'm sure you remember back, I'm pretty sure it was 2011, where Leinster had to do the same thing and beat Treviso by a drop goal. It was Devon Toner caught a hand back, I think, or caught a restart. And Sexton got a drop goal from quite far out just to do the same thing.
It was a pre-planned play. It was if you like, an onside kick, or the rugby version of an onside kick, just landed on the 10. Toner got the ball back to Sexton, two phases, and then bang over. That was, so I mean, Munster did that without the kind of the plan. Well, obviously the plan was to get the drop goal, but they did it without, you know, having that kind of set piece involved. So I mean, I'm immensely impressed with Hanrahan for the way he finished that, because it would have been easy for him to shank him. And to a certain extent, it was at the end of a match, it was a long way out, and he hasn't had the greatest season. Nobody would have blamed him if he'd missed it or hadn't even gone for it. But he stood up there like a man, like, and took it.
Yep.
Yeah, fair play to him. So that leaves Munster now. They're top of their league. I think they're 15 points ahead of Connacht. Connacht have a game.
3 Munster players I've praised in the last.
It's lockdown day, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's getting to you.
I must be drunk.
Yeah. So look, you know, it looks like both tables, two Irish teams. But in first and second position in both tables, which is good to see. And we will come to that now when we talk about the Ireland-Wales game. Obviously, we beat them last year, 32-9. And we also beat them we beat them 24-14 in the Six Nations. And we beat them 32-9 in the Autumn International. So, you know, they're going through a transition phase like ourselves. So They have a new coach like ourselves, so lots of similarities.
Yeah. People are saying they're in a state of chassis, and, you know, yes, they are, as are we a little bit. But let's not forget that Joe Schmidt, as far as I know, never won a Six Nations game in Cardiff. So it's not like it's a piece of piss here. It's it could be even the last time we won in Cardiff was the Grand Slam. If not, it was a year or two after, because we haven't won, certainly haven't won under Joe Schmidt. So going over to Wales with a bit of an attitude is a quick way to, no matter how shite Wales are playing, it's a quick way to get a manners put on you. So I'm sure the team won't be going over there with that attitude, but I think a lot of the fans and some of the pundits have the attitude that we just need to show up and we're going to kick the shite out of them. I wouldn't be so sure. I'd say we're probably favourites, but it could all go pear-shaped on Sunday. It is Sunday, isn't it? It could all go pear-shaped on Sunday very, very quickly if we don't, you know, we're not in the right frame of mind. So,
yeah. It's funny you should say that. Would you say, like, I was surprised, right? And I just had a look over, since the year 2000, we played them 21 times in the Six Nations. And you know what how many matches we've won compared to them? We have won 13 times. They've won 7, and it was one draw. That's just surprised me that there was, you know, almost twice as many victories for us than them. We also played them a couple of times in, say, significant matches. Obviously, the World Cup quarterfinal being one that they won. The other kind of significant one was the Autumn Internationals from last year. But I mean, they weren't kind of friendlies. It was actually, and then even when we played them in pre-World Cup friendlies, we won 4 of those 5 matches that we've played as friendlies. So, like, our record against them stacks up undoubtedly better. You know, you can say that Joe Schmidt didn't win in Cardiff. You're right, he didn't. But he certainly won his fair share of matches against them while he was a coach.
Yeah, no, that's undoubtedly true. But there's a couple of things. One, Andy Farrell doesn't appear to be Joe Schmidt.
Nope.
Having said that, Wayne Pivac doesn't appear to be Warren Gatland.
Well, he has beaten them twice. He's unbeaten in the two matches he's played.
No, that is true.
I mean, you know,
you always have to be careful going over to Wales and looking at Wales in terms of how their players are playing for their clubs, because Wales, more than any other international team, certainly in the Northern Hemisphere, are more like a club team than an international team. Their players always seem to outperform their club performances for their national team more consistently than any other country does. I mean, you look at the Welsh regions over the last, we'd say, 4 years. You know, they're rubbish. And then you look at Wales in the World Cup, and they're considerably better than us. So
a lot of that was Gatland, though. Gatland to get them into the...
Well, Gatland certainly was a superb coach and a superb organizer of coaching as well. Possibly even more than he was a coach himself. He was a brilliant creator of a college of coaches, if you like. He had the right guys doing the right jobs at the right time. But Gatland is gone now. Pivac I don't think anyone would question that as a coach. Pivac would be a better coach, Maria, than Gatland on the pitch. But whether he can run an international team, it's a very different demand running an international team than running a club side. You have things you have to do in international rugby that you don't have to do in club rugby. Vice versa, if you have a problem in international, like if your winger goes off to a gender reveal party and rules himself out for 2 matches, at a club you can just sign someone. You can't do that in international. You're stuck with what you have. So
people who aren't Americans actually have those things these days.
Apparently they do. Madness, but anyway. They're different demands, but I would be very wary of judging the Welsh national team on the provinces of the Welsh on the performance of the players for the Welsh province, for the Welsh regions, because they're very different things, and there's a very different attitude in club Wales as there is in club Llanelli or Ospreys or Dragons. But having said that, on a player-by-player basis, on the way our players are performing at the moment, you'd be very disappointed if Ireland don't win this game. That's not to say that Wales are no hopers or the rubbish or anything like that. I wouldn't go along with that. Certain pundits during the week kind of made holy shows of themselves by just being idiots. But you have to be respectful of the opposition. But you know, a cold analysis of the teams would suggest that Ireland would be favourites. But it's international rugby. It's Ireland versus Wales, and it's in Wales. So you know, there's an awful lot of levelers there as well.
Just going back to your point about the, you know, sort of say the results of the different provinces, right? So I just looked at the tables of the Pro 14 this year. So obviously the four Irish teams are both lying first and second in each respective conference. The Irish clubs have played a total of 43 matches, winning 34. So that's 79% win rate. The Welsh clubs have played 44 games and won 20, just winning 45%. Now, it's obviously that's derbies in there. But my point is that the Welsh clubs are third and fourth in one conference and third and fifth in another. Significantly off the pace. Like, they're not going to get near first place in either pool to, you know, so that they're significantly off. Going back to, you mentioned about, you know, the Welsh team seem to be able to unite together to, you know, to put sort of club Wales ahead of anything else. And I heard Bernard Jackman make a similar point today. And he said, obviously he's got experience from being a coach over there, was that because they don't really buy into the provincial thing, they haven't really been successful. So they don't play too often in semi-finals of Heineken Cups or finals of Pro 14s. And he said, so therefore they actually don't go to the well that frequently. And they can come in just entirely focused on the Six Nations, rather than in the back of their mind, like if it was a regular season and no COVID, you know, both Leinster and Munster and possibly Ulster are thinking, we've got a Heineken Cup quarterfinal. Leinster probably thinking, Heineken Cup quarterfinal, we're leading our conference in the Pro 14. We've got all these games that they also have to be, you know, cognizant of. Whereas the Welsh clubs are out of it by this stage of the season. All they have to focus on is the Six Nations. Yep. Nothing else will distract them.
You look at it over the last, we'll say, just for the sake of argument, 22 years, just to stretch a point. Ireland have won, let's see now, 1, 3, 7 European Cups, 8 if you include the Donkey Derby, right? Wales have what, 2 Challenge Cups in that period of time. On the other hand, Warren Gatland has more Grand Slams than Ireland.
Mm.
You know, so that kind of shows you how things have panned out, and to a certain extent, that's we're in a similar situation.
But
now.
Like we won, like say we have, you know, Wales kind of can oscillate. They can win a Grand Slam one year,
and got finished bottom.
Like they won the Grand Slam two seasons ago.
Yeah.
They got to the semi final of the World Cup, and they were fifth last season. Yeah. Scotland beat them, you know, to push them into fifth. So, like they seem to oscillate. I would say Ireland would probably average somewhere between second and third over the last 20 years. You know, I couldn't tell you how many championships they won. They've certainly won 2 Grand Slams, which was, you know, like we've only won 3, and we've won 2 of them in the last, whatever, 12 years. Like,
Wales either win a Grand Slam or end up in a bum fight with Italy for the bottom position. That's just how it is. But they win an awful lot of those Grand Slams, they win. So, you know, it's and the thing is that Wales are better coached than their regions generally, or have been over that period of time. Wales have been better coached than the regions, with the exception of a couple of years. I don't think this year is one, or it remains to be seen. At least 3 of the Irish provinces are better coached than the national team, I think. Now, it has to be said that the national team coach is only in there, you know, a year and a half. So he has inexperience. He has to build up his own style of play, his own set of experiences. He's taken over a bunch of players who spent maybe 10 years been coached by the previous guy. So he has to, you know, he deserves time. I'm not saying, you know, it's time to get out the door. But I'm just pointing out the fact that at this point in time, if you said at Christmas and you look back at the last 12 months, you would definitely say that at least three of the Irish provinces were better coached than the national team.
Hard to compare, in fairness.
Oh no, I mean, to a certain extent, you're comparing apples and oranges, and I agree with that. But we have to move on from where we were last year. Last year, we mixed the mediocre with the okay. You know, I'd want to see a bit more this year. I want to see some development of our play, because last year we didn't seem to develop the game at all, the Irish game at all, and other teams moved on. France moved on. England moved on. We didn't.
And what you know, we can kind of say we're transitioning, and we aren't as good as England and France, and that's fair enough. You know, like they're in different life cycles of their team, but also far more resources to pick from. But like, we were appalling against Georgia in that autumn series. You know, okay, we kind of upped the game when we really had to against Scotland at the end, but like, you know, we should have, like, Georgia, we probably made Georgia look much better than they were. And, you know, like, I thought if they had had a little bit more ball, they might have actually won that game.
No, that's a valid point. We do seem to, in the last year, have the ability to let teams drag us down to their level. Because, I mean, there's a good team in there. And, you know, there's young, there's inexperienced at this level coaches involved, so you have to give them a bit of breathing room. But I would want to see a development of the game. Look, I'm not saying we should be beating England. We shouldn't. England are at a different point in their development cycle. They're at a different point in their coaching cycle, and it's the same with France. Apparently the rumors coming out of France are that there are no rumors coming out of France, which is, you know, worrying for the rest of us, because apparently the French camp are all getting along. They all like the coach. There's nobody walked off in a snit. That's, you know, that hasn't been seen for a few years. That hasn't been seen since the last time France were dominant.
Yeah. But it's
France have been shit for the whole of the last decade, though. You know, pretty much.
They've been ground with one another for the whole of the last decade.
By their own high standards, they've been absolute dog shit for a decade. Like, they beat the All Blacks, I think, in 2009. They obviously, we won a Grand Slam. I can't remember how they did in 2010, but they usually win the year after a Lions Tour. But since then, they've just faded away. And in the last year, watch out, world, because they're building for their home World Cup in 2023. So we'll be doing well to be better than third in the Six Nations in the next couple of years, in my opinion.
I'd say there's regular lorry loads of cash being driven up to the door of the FFR for development reasons, like, because obviously they want a strong France team going into that World Cup, much like they did actually with the French football team in 98. I mean, there was no expense spared in making sure that team was ready for the World Cup, and it'll be the same for the French rugby team.
Sure.
And they seem to have, you know, the union and the clubs aren't at loggerheads. We saw that last season.
The other thing as well, like, nobody's rallying in French rugby.
That they kind of came to that arrangement, you know, and it kind of benefited from, even though they lost in the final in that extra time against England, they played lovely rugby. They blooded a load of young fellas, and they kind of showed that some of those young guys can operate at international level. So, you know, like, they have a few injuries this time around. You know, everyone is kind of talking about, what's your man's name, the French centre that's injured?
Vakatawa?
Yeah. But like, they probably have brought in somebody young in the autumn internationals when they could they were told to rotate their players. So they're not going to come in completely new. They're going to be after having a couple of caps under their belt.
I mean, 12 months ago, the absence of Entomac would have been considered a disaster for France. Now it's just a pity. but it's not a disaster because they have players, mm-hmm. and they've seen players, and they've blooded those players at the highest level. So France are in a really good position. In fact, if they can get over their mental problems that they seem to have in recent years with playing England, then get over those, I can see them beating England. I can see a Grand Slam in that French team this year.
Yeah. I think that they're the only one that could win the Grand Slam maybe this year, yeah. I think. Just turn back to the Irish game. Rumours abound that they're going to go old school for Wales in the back row. Balotelli, Tipperick, and...
Warburton. Warburton.
That'll be very old school. No, Lydia.
Yeah. Like they've drafted him back in. They haven't drafted him back in to sit on the bench, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of teams swirling around. We'll see what happens actually tomorrow when they get picked. So, you never
know. One bit of news that we do know that obviously Caelan Darris had to go back.
Yeah.
Had to pull out of the squad because of concussion, which is worrying. And Quinn Roo's out, I think, with a neck injury. So they've drafted in Baird and Gavin Coombs. We were making cases for the potential inclusion of those lads as a 38-man squad lads, not leaving someone out, but to actually have brought them in. So they come in, but I suppose because we know that Darris was probably 100% guaranteed to start. So it's going to leave a bit of a hole in that back row, what way they rejig it.
You've got plenty of options, though. You can bring the form six in Ireland, Reece Ruddock in, put CJ at eight and leave Omani at seven. You can put Omani back to six and put Josh van der Fleer in. You can leave Omani on the bench and have both of them in. You can play both of the guys who've been drafted into the squad can play six. Gavin Coombs is probably better at eight, but he moves to six for Munster, so you'd have to assume the same thing. You've got Tadhg Byrne who can play six or eight. Like, you have got a plethora of options there. Which one he goes with? I'd probably go Ruddock. Ruddock, Stander, and either Omani or van der Fleer with the other one on the bench would be my selection. Don't know what Andy Farrell's going to do, but... sorry, I didn't even mention Will Connors, who can be, you know, who's Mr. Chop Tackle, seeing as Dan Lydiate is in the conversation. I'm not sure that this is a game for Mr. Chop Tackle, but, you know, he's another option. Like, there's just ridiculous amount of options in the back row. They're probably mine. Peter Omani seems to always get into the squad on his line-out ability alone. Whether that's on the bench or at seven or even at six, we don't know.
You might even see Henderson playing second row and Tadhg Byrne in the back row. You know, options are pretty much endless.
If they go with Peter O'Mahony at seven, then they really need Tadhg Byrne at six, because somebody has to win the ball on the deck or at least attempt to, because that's just not his game. It's not what he does. I personally think that they'll go with O'Mahony at six and van der Fleer at seven, or Ruddock at six and O'Mahony at seven. I was astonished to see, and it actually knocked me. It actually really, really surprised me when I read it. Somebody wrote online, Reece Ruddock has never started a Six Nations match.
Really?
Crazy, isn't it?
Couldn't believe it. Then I thought about it and realised it was... But the idea, I mean, he has never started a Six Nations game.
How many caps has he got,
you know? Not that many.
He hasn't a huge amount, but, you know, when you consider that he's been around since, what, 2010?
26.
26 caps. It's not a huge amount of caps for 12 years, is it?
No.
And he's been, I mean, okay, he's had injuries, but he's been playing at a pretty high level all that time. He's played a lot of European rugby in that time. So, but, I mean, one area Ireland haven't been short in the last... since 2000 is in the back row. I mean, there's been an awful lot of really good back rowers. Like, and we're not talking mediocrities. We're talking really good back rowers. And Peter O'Mahony.
I think it's almost the, you know, the for genetics, for an Irish person, it's almost the, you know, the frame of an Irish person is a good back rower.
Yeah, a good football fullback or midfielder. Okay,
exactly. You know, it's sort of it's that position where we're not like Afrikaners that are 6'8" and like trees.
So moving to the guys who are 6'8" and like trees, if Henderson is any kind of form, I'd probably play him next to James Ryan.
It'd have to be Henderson and Ryan, really, I think.
Tadhg Byrne on the bench, more than likely. It's Delan and Tadhg Byrne and possibly Baird are the remaining second row capable players. So you'd have to say Tadhg Byrne on the bench, and that gives you versatility of having him and another potential back rower. Yeah. So if you really want to turbocharge the back row, you can get Henderson and Ryan to play 80. But we'll see how that all goes. But so we're all agreed that Henderson and Ryan are going to start.
I would say so. I don't see the benefit of having Henderson on the bench, because he's not a guy who comes on and lifts the pace of the game the way that Tadhg Byrne can, or even Ryan Baird, or even Ulta Delan, who's a bit more orthodox, but still, those guys have the ability to change pace of a game. Henderson's not that guy. He's a bit, to a certain extent, like Josh Mate used to describe Paddy Jackson. If he doesn't start, he's no good to me, kind of thing.
So we're going to have Porter and Healy starting as the incumbents, with Furlong and Kilcoyne on the bench.
I can't see how they can start Furlong after 40 minutes in 1 year.
Yeah.
Unless we haven't seen him this week, Jay, so he could be pulling up trees in training. So,
sure,
he was pulling up trees on the field, in fairness.
The other thing to take into account is Wales are probably going to be starting Thomas Francis, who has had the Indian sign on Keen Healy.
Mm.
I mean, he does play very well against Keen Healy. If you think back to Leinster's performances any time we played Exeter, when the two of them have been up against one another, and it hasn't. I mean, there was a period where, do you remember, we were pummeling Exeter on their line? Their prop got sin binned. Thomas Francis came on and turned Keen Healy inside out. He's a really good scrummager whose style of scrummaging is almost directly inimical to Healy's style of scrummaging. So that might be something to worry about. They might be looking at Kilcoyne to start and then bring Healy on Alan Montpellier. Like
Kilcoyne's had so little rugby as well. They could be playing brilliantly in training, and
That's another issue. Because Kilcoyne is, I mean, 4 or 5 years ago, if you'd said Kilcoyne, it would have been me. But he's really come on in the last couple of years through his own hard work, it has to be said, to where he could be challenging Keane Healy. I mean, he's leapfrogged, completely leapfrogged Jack McGrath.
He's always been great in the loose, Dave Kilcoyne. He's always been a great carrier. He's always had a lot of things to recommend him there, and therefore a great impact. So, however, previous his perpendicular scrummaging has been called into question on many occasions, but he seems to have nailed that down, whatever he's done. Because, you know, I've been at games live watching him, and he literally, if you were sitting parallel to where the scrum was, you'd see his arse every time. Like, he just seemed to...
Yeah, but 50% of the time, he would get the penalty in his favour.
Yeah, he's good at it.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, it is kind of a tactic, and the referees don't know what they're doing. They just blow up and could be wrong.
The two areas where Kilcoyne was weak were in the scrum and without the ball. When his team didn't have the ball, his concentration wasn't the greatest. And in the last 3 or 4 years, he's completely fixed that.
Yeah. So, he's good. But that's, you know, him and Healy are the two loose head props. They're not going to put Andrew Porter back to loose head. Like, certainly not. I don't think ever, but certainly not in the middle of a campaign.
I was just going to say, I couldn't agree more with you. And like, we saw what happens when you play a prop out of position. We've seen it twice now in the last 10 years for Ireland. One was when they brought Tom Court on and played him on the tight head. Didn't work. And we saw it there against Georgia, and Finlay Beelan, you know, was playing loose head. you know, it's probably ruined his international career.
I mean, Porter has a lot of experience at the loose head because he only switched to tight head maybe 4 or 5 years ago. But he is a tight head now, and the game has changed, and the technical requirements of scrummaging have changed.
His experience is probably only, like, you know, under-20s rugby and schools rugby.
No, that's
like, it's a little bit, like, since he kind of came into Leinster, they said, no, we're tight swapping head. You over to the tight head, and that's it, you know?
Yeah, it happened early on in his career, all right.
And it's not as if there's a shortage of loose heads outside the squad. There's a lot of good loose heads knocking around the place. So I don't ever see Porter ever switching back.
Also, that Tom Court thing you mentioned, that was the last season, as far as I can remember, where you had 22-man squads, where you needed a guy who could play both sides.
Yeah.
And fellas got their place on the bench because they could play both sides. That's gone now. You know, you're going to have two loose heads and you're going to have two tight heads in every 23. So, in fact, you have to. It's mandated. So it's not such a big thing anymore. Like, it's one of those things that you do in an emergency. But generally, it's not something you're going to be doing.
So I despise the terminology that Eddie Jones uses. The reality is you don't pick starters and bench guys. Or you don't pick starters and substitutes in the front row. You pick four front rows to play the match, or indeed six. But certainly in props, you pick four props who are going to play the match. That's how it goes. Unless there's an injury, you're not going to be... I wouldn't be surprised if whoever starts is gone after 50 anyway.
So, do we think that Rob Herring has the Indian sign over Ronan Kelleher, the incumbent spot with Kelleher on the bench?
The difference between The difference between them is at least Rob Herring knows where the cow's arse is.
But I think there's so much pressure, well, on both coach and tickets, but particularly, say, from an Irish point of view, they need this win. Like, if they lose this game, they've got France the following week. You know, France are probably the best, as we mentioned earlier, the best French team in 10 years. You could be looking down the barrel of going into the break after two defeats. They have to win this game. It's vital.
Absolutely.
So I think they're going to go kind of conservative, and therefore... I just think they're going to go for Herring because he's, you know, been there, done that for the last 10 years or 8 years, whatever it is. He's been playing in Ulster.
Leads me on neatly to...
At the other side, just add to Jason's point. At the end of the day, it's the Six Nations. You win every Six Nations match by 1 point, you win a Grand Slam, which is the greatest prize in world rugby. You know? There's style points, meh.
Leads me on neatly to the obvious conservative selection at halfback, where you've got Murray and Sexton. Nothing is going to challenge that, surely. Gibson, Park and Burns being on the bench, most likely. There is possibly a discussion to be had is in the centre. I'd be going with Henshaw, Henrose and Ringshaw, but you could easily put Bundiaki into that mix. The back three is somewhere where you definitely could have a discussion. I'd be going all Leinster with Lowe if he's fit, Larmour and Keenan, but there's a case to be made for Keith Darrows, there's a case to be made for Andrew Conway. You know,
I don't know if there's a case to be made for Keith Darrows. There's certainly a case to be made for Andrew Conway. Keith Darrows hasn't been playing well in the last while. Conway has at least been playing well for Ireland. But I agree.
Conway hasn't played in 5 or 6 weeks.
No.
He has a green shirt. Well, agreed. And he was probably should have played in, I know it's nearly a year and a half ago, but probably should have played more in Japan than he did, because he was, himself and Larmour were the two form guys. They didn't seem to make the starting 15. But he hasn't played in 5 or 6 weeks for inverted commas personal reasons. And I don't want to delve into it because obviously they are personal reasons. But like, he can't be that match fit if he hasn't been pulling a jersey on. So I would have concerns.
Well, the elephant in the room, of course, is that the form winger in Ireland, bar none, isn't in the squad.
Mm-hmm.
For reasons that are beyond my understanding. Because, you know, not only is he scoring loads of tries, he's a guy who can play in two positions in the back three and do it well. But, you know.
And isn't a new capper, so therefore has plenty of experience. Probably has 20 caps, or I don't know many, but, you know, he doesn't need to be held. His hand doesn't need to be held.
No, no, it's a very strange selection. But, you know, we are where we are. So, yeah, I mean, James Lowe hasn't played for a couple of weeks either.
A few months.
I think that might stand against him, though, John.
The only guy who I would suggest is clearly going to be selected and possibly clearly deserves it is Keenan.
Yeah.
Larmer didn't have the greatest. He's never started at 15 for Ireland.
No, but I think he should. I mean, Larmer didn't have the greatest of days against Munster. Lowe hasn't played. Earls isn't playing well. Conway hasn't played. You know, you find yourself in a bit of a sticky wicket there.
I have to agree with you. And just in case there's any person who is mad enough to watch this program and doesn't realize who you're talking about, which there can't really be, but just in case, Dave Kearney was the man you were alluding to but never mentioned. I think...
Don't say his name, John. You're not allowed to say his name.
He should definitely be in there. Given the fact that we've just gone through all the players there, Larmer not in amazing form. Lowe hasn't played since the autumn internationals. So it's not just a few weeks, it's a few months. Earls not in amazing form. Conway not playing regularly. That's all the wingers. Like, Shane Daly is arguably a full back. Everybody else is a centre. Yeah. You know, there is no one else in the squad. So why is Dave Kearney not in there? Why have they got why is Stuart McCluskey there and Dave Kearney isn't? Like, does he make really nice tea? What is it? I don't want to shit on the guy. He's a very good player for Ulster. He does a great job there. But he's never had a run in the first team much for Ireland. And it looks like at this stage of his career, he probably won't. He's a there or thereabouts kind of guy. But, you know, there are clearly four centres ahead of him by a distance. And, you know, I'm sure he's a great guy to have about the place for repping and for all of that. But is he going to trouble the first team? And would it not be better to have Mr. Kearney in the squad ahead of him? Rant over.
Going back to centres, actually, it's very interesting because, you know, you have a situation where obviously the presumptive favourites, if you like, for the position are Henshaw and Ringrose. Personally, I don't care who else plays as long as Henshaw does. And I don't care where Henshaw plays as long as it's 12 or 13. You know, so what I'm saying there is...
He seems to be form back, doesn't he?
Huh?
I would say, well, himself and Keenan are probably the form backs.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it has to be said that Aki only made his comeback last week, so he hasn't played a huge amount of rugby. So that would, you know, but you can play Henshaw with anyone. Henshaw is a bit like he's a bit like water. He's the universal catalyst. Everyone looks better beside Robbie Henshaw.
Well, I just love Gary Ringrose as a player. I think he's so much more creative than putting Henshaw and Aki out there in either combination. Not that they're not both great players and yada, 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 but I just think it's a bit like you were saying about Munster last week with Farrell and De Allende. It's two bludgeons when you need a rapier and a bludgeon, you know?
My belief is it doesn't matter to a certain extent whether you play Ringrose and Henshaw, Aki and Henshaw, Henshaw and Aki, whichever way. I don't think that the outside centre is going to be doing any passing whatsoever unless if he can help it.
Well, we'll see.
I just don't think so.
Let's see.
I think the job of the backs is to help the forwards get the ball up to the five and then settle in, lads, for 40 phases.
Well, we'll see.
I think you're right. Lads, before we run out of time, just want to quickly look at the other two games very briefly. We kind of spoke about France. Italy haven't won in 27 games. Like, they're
28 on
they're due one. What was that?
They'll be 28
on Monday. Think so, yeah. I was going to say they're due one, but not. I don't think it's going to be in this round. The other game, it's the 150th Calcutta Cup match.
Wow.
On Farrell's picked at 10. George Ford is not selected. I was looking at the Scottish team. Five of their backs, of the seven backs, are playing their rugby outside of Scotland. And I was kind of thinking, that is such a shame that those lads are, you know, they're good, talented players are leaving. Obviously, there's one, Redpath is, you know, he's kind of, he hasn't played in Scotland. He plays for Bath. But the rest of them have all emigrated out of Scotland and ultimately out of the Pro 14, which is the league that our teams play in. And, you know, I just think it's a shame.
I think it's a shame for the Pro 14, but it's not all unusual for Scotland.
Well, I know that, but like,
but it is a disappointment.
They should be trying to have their players playing in their country. Yeah,
and I think they have. Problem with Scotland is they only have two teams.
Yeah, but they should try and get.
Yeah.
Instead of they're selling, like, their two clubs are they bring through exciting players like Hogg or you know Russell, and they kind of get to a point and they feel they have to leave, and I just think. You know, it's a debate for another day, but I just think it's sad that they feel that they need to go to Paris or to Exeter to, you know.
I'd like Scotland to have a third province, maybe based in Aberdeen or something like that. That would allow the development of players. And it would mean that the element of player management in Scotland that says, well, if these guys go, we can bring new players through because we've only got two fullback positions to fill. Maybe that comes into it. If they had a third team, it would give them a bit more flexibility. It might also give them a bit more, you know, revenue from gates if we ever allow go to rugby again.
Well, we've been around this thing a few times before, but basically Scotland's actively encouraged their players once they get to a certain level to go abroad because it means they can bring other players through. They've no other way with two teams. They have to go abroad. It suits them.
Okay. Lads, I just want three words, the three winners. John?
France, England, Ireland. Dave? In order of how much they're going to win by as well.
I'm going to go France, Scotland, Ireland.
Nice one, I'd agree. Okay, lads, as ever, thanks a million. Thanks very much for watching. If you are following us on Facebook or Twitter, please give us a like and a subscription and a thumbs up. Thanks a million for watching. Cheers.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.